back for episode 51 of the TV Talk Machine. I am your returning co-host, Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman, your host. Hello.
Woohoo!
Welcome back. I guess welcome me back.
Welcome you back, yeah.
Episode 50 was very nice.
Yeah, actually, technically, we're both being welcomed back. You're being welcomed back to the podcast.
Yes.
I'm being welcomed back to...
To civilization.
Yes. I was in Big Sur all this week. Nice. Came back today, Friday.
And you're doing the podcast. That is commitment.
I know, you know? Mm-hmm. You may hear my dog growling in the background. It's just going to be good ambient
That's
sound.
Good. Mm-hmm. I think that's what the people tune in for.
You know, it makes them feel like it's real.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like we're not in some antiseptic studio, which we're not.
Because it is real.
It's so real.
It couldn't be realer.
We're going to find out exactly how real it is.
We are. I think so.
Yeah.
I, for the record, I was in Portland and not on Waikiki Beach, but I did appreciate the special Hawaii 5-0 themed, David's going to do that. That is David's bag. So
that is, he had that all clearly. I don't need to tell you this. I had nothing to do with it.
No, he was ready to go. he was ready to do it. So
I don't need to tell you because, you know, I would do nothing.
Yeah.
Literally, there'd be no graphics. I would probably forget. I would be no tie-ins.
Yeah, so that's okay. I enjoyed listening to it. It was fun to listen to the TV Talk Machine and not know what was going to happen.
Who knew what was going to happen? I didn't even know what was going to happen. And I'm on it.
Yeah, that's true. That happens every week,
really,
though.
It's really scary. Mm-hmm.
So we got a lot to talk about this week because really the fall TV season, which has sort of been trickling in, comes in with a bang in the coming week. As we say this, there's a lot of stuff out there. And I know you haven't seen and aren't reviewing all of it, but there's a lot of it out there. And there's some stuff that you've already reviewed even as we record this. So we should probably talk about that. But I wanted to start with Sunday because the Emmys are on Sunday. We've talked about it a lot. And then we, you know, after the nominations came out, and then we just kind of let it out there. But we'll be able to see who the winners are and complain about them on Sunday night.
Yes, it is. I first want to give like a little woohoo to myself for not having to review everything.
Oh, to yourself. I was wondering who you were going to compliment there, and it was yourself. Okay.
It was myself. I'm going to compliment myself. A little woohoo for not having to do all the reviews.
So some of the big news is that, you know, the chief TV critic, and then the question was, well, who are the other TV critics? And it was a bunch of freelancers, I think, mostly. But now there is a TV critic.
Yes. Daniel Feinberg. Dan Feinberg.
Yes.
We call him Daniel in print and probably
that's his
on
byline, but everybody calls him Dan.
Yeah. So Dan, who had a very long run at HitFix, is with THR now. And so this is good news. I mean, I was – it's funny because I give everybody so much credit for like – you know, no one's like – no one asked me, oh, like, are you worried? And I was like – because I had my speech all prepared for them. Like I spearheaded with Lacey Rose – getting Dan hired at THR. He's a wonderful talent. He is I joked with him that I was using fantasy baseball because he's a big baseball fan too. Fantasy baseball knowledge that he was the prime free agent acquisition of the year out there. So, yeah, when he was out there, he let me know. And we were like, "Well, let's get on that right away." So, we worked on it really quickly. It was so funny. I spent so much time prepping Dan that, like, you know, THR moves a little slow on some things. And I said, you know, it's good. He had vacation planned and whatnot. But they moved very quickly. And I think that was because both me and Lacey were pressing them really hard because he's a wonderful pickup. So Dan will be doing a lot of the reviews as well, taking off a bunch off my plate. And I told Dan that which is great. I said to Dan, I said, before you were on officially, we knew he was in the fold, but it hadn't – until the thing was signed yet, he could have backed out. I had to farm out a lot of these shows. And, you know, since we have – and this is no disrespect to freelancers. I just don't know any – I don't know who they are personally.
Right.
So I was doing what I wanted to do basically, which is a veiled way of saying I took all the good shows and I farmed out all the crappy shows. So when Dan took over, Dan had this list of stuff that I didn't want to do. And so I was like, sorry, buddy. That's really bad. But I promised him in the future that I would be generous and not trying to like hog up all the good stuff because there's more than enough great stuff to go around. And Again, I'm a big fan of Dan's, and we're happy to have him at THR.
You're both fantasy sports fans. This is easy. You just need to do a draft. Just draft your shows.
We need to do a draft, exactly.
Draft who gets
the like a balance. You have to have money. Who's gonna bid on Fargo? I would have spent all my money on Fargo and like two other shows.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been out, and I would have been reviewing all these super crap.
Yeah, then you're gonna be reviewing Scream Queens.
Yes. Thank God I didn't get that one.
Limitless.
But we want to go Emmys first, right?
Yeah, let's talk about the Emmys Sunday. Chronologically, that is, well, the big Doctor Who season premiere is Saturday night. I'm very
excited. Oh, yes. Are you super excited?
I am excited about that. Maybe Dan will watch Doctor Who. Maybe he'll know.
He will probably know. He's got a good... I think he does have a good knowledge of that.
He probably does.
That's
Saturday night. You know, it's just a returning show. But Sunday night, it's the Emmys... They could hand trophies. They won't, but they could hand trophies to lots of surprising people who were excited, got Emmy nominations. But they probably won't, right?
I'm hoping that they do. Mm. Obviously, I'm hoping that Mad Men gets
such an optimist.
Series. I am. You know what? Like, I was looking at this list. We recycled this list that Scott Feinberg, not related to Dan Feinberg, he's an awards analyst at THR, and so he does the whole horse and pony show for every single awards. And as we know, there's millions of them out there. So he does all those. So he and I got together on this. And he did the Will Win. He's the what is that word I'm looking for?
Prognosticator.
Prognosticator. That's exactly it. And I am the critic, which is like, who knows what they're going to do, but let me tell you who should win. That's me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my list.
So hoping for Mad Men. Yeah.
Yeah, hoping for Mad Men. I hoping for John Hamm, maybe even more than Mad
Men. Yeah.
I mean, to me, Mad Men is sort of this slam dunk win there. I'm happy that Better Call Saul got nominated, but here's where something weird would happen. I like people who work on that show, both behind the camera and in front of it, and write it. I would be really annoyed if they won, though, because it would deprive Mad Men, which is, I think, is the deserving candidate, and it would also be like the ultimate FU to the Americans. And so that is in some strange way a show that I like. If it wins, it's gonna kill people on both sides. It's like a blade that opens on both ends.
Yikes!
Scary, right?
It is scary. Yeah.
Yeah. Who thought of that?
I think it might be you. You're scared. You're frightening me now. It's a Friday Night Scare Fest.
Yeah.
Anything else you're I mean, Tatiana Maslany could walk away with again, she won't, but she could walk away with an Emmy.
Well, I predicted her as a should win. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've got comedy series, my should win is Louie.
Mm-hmm.
Limited series, my should win is The Honorable Woman. I think it's probably going to go to Olive Kitteridge, which would be fine too. It's a very strong lineup. TV movie, my should win is Bessie, which I think is going to be a slam dunk winner. From HBO that night. A variety talk series. My should win is, I think that there's a chance that, Letterman could get it and he would deserve it. But I think there could be that vote, that sort of like outgoing vote. But the should win, who deserves it most, is John Oliver.
Wow.
For Last Week Tonight. So he's on my list. Variety sketch series, Key and Peele. That is the industry standard. If they don't get it, I think Amy Schumer is probably going to be the pick because she's so hot right now. But Key and Peele, industry standard.
Hmm.
Again, John Hamm as the actor. I have him there. I have Tatiana Maslany as my should win. Jeffrey Tambor in the comedy series actor for Transparent. I think he will win, actually, as well. Same kind of situation, will win, should win. Julia Louis-Dreyfus for Veep in the comedy. I have, for actor in a limited series or movie, I have Richard Jenkins from Olive Kitteridge and Maggie Gyllenhaal for The Honorable Woman. I got Peter Dinklage in supporting actor and drama series. Christina Hendricks, Mad Men, supporting actress. That'd be a nice little victory there. In a comedy series, I've got Keegan-Michael Key as supporting actor. That's a should win on that one. I don't think it's going to be a win. I would obviously love Tony Hale to win as well. But I just think it's been such a great year for Key and Peele. Actress in a comedy series, I went with Anna Chlumsky from Veep.
Hmm.
And again, in films and limited series, which I don't cover that much, I've got Kenneth Williams for Bessie. You got to have Omar win. That'd be good. And last but not least, in the supporting actress category, here's a stunner. Sarah Paulson for American Horror Story. I had to pick somebody from American Horror Story.
Oh, my God.
Jason, that's a crushing blow to me.
Big deal.
She's good, though. I got to hand it to her. She's pretty amazing. Two-headed woman.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Emmy Awards. I might not watch them.
Oh, for God's sake. How does that happen? How do you not watch the Emmys?
There's other stuff.
You got to be let down like the rest of us.
Okay.
Want you to be disappointed.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
Because this is National Critics Get Disappointed Night in America.
Okay.
That's
you're right.
AKA the Emmys.
Okay.
And you need to be there. You need to feel my pain.
I need to be committed to this. You're right. To the television life.
I want you to have your own reactions to your own perceived winners and losers. And then I want you to cackle when somebody I picked or wanted to win is nowhere near getting it. Like, oh, Goodman's going to be mad at that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to hear that.
Okay. Good. Okay, it's a pact then.
Yeah, it's packed.
You're making me watch the Emmys. Got it. Mm-hmm. Check.
With a blade that comes out both sides.
Both ends, yeah.
Deadly.
Okay. Let's move on to...
Let's get I'm done with the Emmys.
Yep, that's it. We'll never talk about them again, except maybe for next week, but then never again.
You know, I take this vacation, I come back, and the first thing I have to do is the Emmys. Kind of crazy, right? Damn it. Check
so I was looking, as I always do, at the stuff that you wrote or at least posted to the Hollywood Reporter this week.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that you wrote a review. This was really sweet, actually. So you wrote a review of Casual, which is from Jason Reitman, and it premiered on Hulu.
Yes.
And it's a very positive review. It's a very nice review. And the sweet thing about it was that I kept seeing your review getting retweeted by the people who made the show. And they were all really excited. And what I believe one of them, it might have even been Jason Reitman, said, tough critic, great review.
Yeah.
It shows that if you like everything, they don't care what you say. But if you're perceived as being kind of tough and you got some standards and then you praise something, it's meaningful.
Yeah, it was nice to see that all of them, like every people who were producers who I didn't even mention in the story, who were and writers, you know, outside of the main writer, but yeah, you know, the main writer and director and the stars, everybody tweeted it out and said nice things. It was great to see. It's also one of those things where THR policy, we've talked before, is if it's going to premiere in a film festival or a TV festival first, we try to review it from the festival because it doesn't actually come on Hulu until October 7th. Mm. But at least everybody will know now that they should watch it. And yeah, it's you know, I usually don't. I mean, I guess you care in some ways if they do like it. It's kind of nice to hear. I don't really care if they don't like it,
sure.
But because you got to have a thicker skin. But it's nice because I think what they were saying I put a lot of effort into it because I think that it would be easy to judge Casual. It's basically, you know, it looks like it's a dating series. It's a divorced woman. She's 39 years old. She's got a 16-year-old daughter. She gets out of this horrible marriage and goes lives with her sort of, you know, typical like younger brother. He's still 35 though. He's the never ending bachelor. But the twist is he's got his own dating website and that he wrote the algorithm to, and he's trying to get her dated. And it all revolves around that. But it could be very superficially. You could review the show very superficially. But the more episodes I watched, I thought there's so much more here, so much more smart that they're doing. And so when I wrote about that, it was nice to see them. It struck a nerve with them that I really tried, and then I was getting at what they were, the deeper meaning that they were trying to get at.
Yeah, it was really gave me a desire to watch it. It sounds like a really good show. So I'm looking forward to that. Now, you mentioned, you know, you need to not worry about when they don't, you know, when they're mad at you because you didn't like their thing. But you did write an interesting piece back last week about You're the Worst, and about how you basically said, I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it when I saw the first couple of episodes, but people kept telling me I should go back and watch it. And then you watched it and you're like, oh, this is really great. And then you didn't just sort of like silently do that and be like, oh man, you wrote a piece that said, I was wrong. It is actually really great, and got on the record about it, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. I kind of think that, you know, there's ways for people to do it, and I kind of think that we all, in some ways, when we're wrong or when something turns around for the better and we had panned it, I think the best a lot of people do is they put it on Twitter. But I just felt like I was flat out wrong about that one. And, you know, and I look back at it and I saw where I kind of half-assed the review. It was a joint review with Married, which is also on FX. And then when I went back and looked at it, I was like, you know, I even say in the review with just very one short little line to not enough emphasis that I should have put on it. I said, the second episode gets better. So what happened was they all got better. And I think it was colored by, you know, I didn't like some of the early jokes in the first pilot. And I didn't like Married at all. And so that did it. But yeah, I felt like you got to own up and go out there and say when you're wrong, especially when you really like it. Like I really love that show now. And to have that review sitting out there just felt weird to me. And, you know, there was some funny history between the creator and I. So it was very funny to be able
to. Did you bury the hatchet with Stephen Falk ultimately?
I did, yeah. And okay. Before the story came out, you know, I had let word out to FX people who had asked me that I had come around on it. They were like, "Oh my god, I can't believe you come around! You gotta like write something." I'm like, yeah. Like, "Who has time? Right? That's never gonna happen." But in the midst of that, they told Steven, and he had jokingly, well, actually maybe not jokingly, wanted me killed at one point, dropped the F word about my name when he saw somebody from THR walking by the day the review came out. So he was very mad. So when they made it a lot of like effort to get us together, like we were going to be at the same party and, oh, let's hook up with you guys. He's a San Francisco guy. He loves the Giants. We should do blah, blah. And I was like, you guys just want me to get together so you can witness me publicly tell him I was wrong. I said, don't get me wrong. I know what you're trying to do. And, but it was, we never really got together. And then finally did, he knew ahead of time that I had turned the corner and I had watched all the episodes. He actually was very touched that I went back and I watched all of them and then said I liked it. So by the time he and I finally did hook up, he was just, as I said in the story, he stupidly took the high road where I probably would have said, yeah, sucker. So he is much more mature than I am. And so by the time the story came out in print, he was very sweet about it. And also there is an instance where the cast members from the show were also didn't say stuff like, oh, this asshole finally came around. They were like, hey, yay for second chances. So they were really sweet about it, you know, and it was nice.
That's good. Well, I'll check that show out now. Now that I hear that it's not as bad as I was led to believe.
Yeah, I sent you down the river with some bad review, Goodman. Stupid.
That's okay. There's a lot of TV, frankly. But, you know, I'll put that back on the good list.
Yeah, but props to them for making a great show. And I just was late to it. And so I made amends.
So it's FXX.
It's on FXX now. So they needed actually a little bit more of a push because they had to switch. It's not on the same, you know, it's not on the same channel. You got to kind of figure it out.
Got that extra X.
There's another X in there. Did you notice that?
For comedy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the X stands for comedy. I don't know.
Extra.
So we got two more. You reviewed Doodle Booty.
I did review Doodle Booty.
Also known as Blind Spot. Less interesting name than Doodle Booty.
Yeah. I mean, I bet right now they're trying to pay David's son off.
Yeah.
To get the right
name.
Yeah.
To Doodle Booty. So Doodle Booty, sorry, Blind Spot, whatever, Doodle Booty, premieres on Monday, the 21st on NBC. And your review is up now at THR. And do you like the pilot?
I did. It definitely has some flaws. But, we're you know, I think if anybody follows TV critics, which people who listen to this podcast, I know that they do. No doubt they have seen us tweet out that this is one of the worst fall seasons for network television in quite
some time. Grim.
So grim. It's so bleak. And to me, the worst thing that they could have done is not send multiple episodes, which they didn't. That's a bigger story because the industry's not built to do that. But of the ones that I did get, there's so many you don't even want to look at. But at least on Blind Spot, despite the stupid title, it's a show that has an interesting premise. I mean, like a woman wakes up naked in a bag, literally in a duffel bag in the middle of Times Square, and her whole body's tattooed, and her memory's wiped, and she's never had tattoo. Well, she's actually had one tattoo, but she didn't put them on. So somebody kidnapped her, tattooed her, stripped her, put her in her bag, stuck her on Times Square, and then put a tag on it that says call the FBI. I mean, it's a great start. I mean, the first 3 minutes of that show are pretty amazing, and it's been, you know, the preview's been out there for a while. But I was like, okay, whatever happens, whatever shortcomings are in this pilot, and it is only a pilot, didn't get any more episodes, at least I'm going to watch it because you got me. You hooked me. I liked that. You did a very good job. You went big, and now I want to know. I want to know how this happened.
She is her own Blacklist.
She is. Yeah, it's very Blacklist-like.
Yeah, but, which is good, right? I mean, yeah, that's the vibe. It's NBC. They're like, get us something with the kind of vibe of the Blacklist, which is a fun... You know, we've talked about it before. It's not necessarily your groundbreaking drama that's going to be listed in the best of all time, but it's fun.
It's fun, and it's well done, and it's entertaining. And that's, to me, at the end of the hour, was I entertained? Is a big deal, and not have to like rack my brain and hurt it so much. Like I love Fargo so much, but there's so much going on in Fargo. I'll be thinking about that constantly. Yeah. And so on like Blacklist and maybe Blindspot if it does well, it's great.
All right.
Just listen to it. We'll just watch an hour of it and not think.
Yeah, Doodle Booty, Monday, 10 o'clock, NBC. Mm-hmm. Check it out. And then last week, Bastard Executioner premiered. You wrote a review of that also ran right before premiered, I guess that was this week on Tuesday, a few days ago.
Yeah,
and that's Kurt Sutter from Sons of Anarchy coming back. I know you've mentioned this a couple of times in passing, because this is the period piece that was shot in Wales, and you know it again, positive review, right? Sounds good.
Yeah, it was a positive review. I watched 2-hour premiere, which even as I said in the review, and that even FX knew that was asking a lot of people.
Right. This is the one where they said you gotta watch the 2 hours. You gotta take the 2 hours to really get into it.
Right. I think that was John Landgraf's decision. He looked at it and he thought, you know, if we just show an hour, it's not going to be enough, and we're at risk of not having people come back for the second hour. We're more at risk to do that than we are to put them together and run it as a 2-hour premiere deep into the night, 10 to midnight. It's a pretty big ask for a lot of people.
Yeah.
On a Tuesday, on a work night. That's a pretty big ask. You're not going to get a whole bunch of ratings on that. But I watched the third episode as well, and I found it really surprising. And, you know, I also don't want to point a lot of fingers. I walked around it a little bit, but I do think certain critics have so much Kurt Sutter baggage that they didn't want to give it a fair chance. Huh. That's just my take on it.
Interesting. I know a bunch of people who are Sons of Anarchy fans, and so, but I also know that Kurt Sutter has had a kind of a, and some of his actors have had a kind of a problematic relationship with some of the critics of their work. So I guess that doesn't surprise me too much. But Sons of Anarchy, you know, generally thought pretty positively of. I mean, when I hear that Kurt Sutter's doing another show, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. You know, set in the olden times, fascinating. Like, Sons of Anarchy vibe, but in the 1400s or whatever. That's kind of a cool idea. So
yeah, it's really, and what I found surprising about it is it wasn't, you know, here's the thing that troubles me a little bit with us as a group and other critics, and you know, no names, because there's a lot of people, different people who do it, but I was a little, you know, people were kind of putting these, they hadn't done the review yet, and they were putting these little snarky comments about how violent or bloody it was, and you know, of course he would do that. Of course that's Sutter. They would do that. But, you know, that cuts both ways for me, because I'm like, okay, wait, actually the most critically acclaimed genre series on television is Game of Thrones, which I think critics cut way too much slack. I mean, I love it. It's one of my favorite shows. I definitely do think it should be nominated for best drama series, not to win it, but to do it. I love it. I never miss it. But boy, I think critics as a whole give that show a very wide berth. And then like just, you know, oh, well, they did what? You know, yeah, they'll talk about the rape stuff, which, you know, I think if that was Kurt Sutter, can you imagine what kind of shitstorm that would be?
Oh, yeah.
So it'd be and not just once, but multiple times on Game of Thrones where they're using rape as a dramatic device, and just really poorly done. And so I was like, you know, really, are we going to like not have, you know, a clean slate for a guy you might have issues with? And I was not a big fan of Sons of Anarchy at the end of its run. It went on too long. It was a little bit bloated. It was extremely violent in ways that I thought were just trying to get a reaction. But clean slate for him and his new show, which I think that's what you have to do. You can be wary, but you got to also be a little bit open-minded. And I was really surprised because I thought he could have been a whole lot more violent and a whole lot more, quote-unquote, Kurt Sutter-ish. But he wasn't. And I think a lot of the things that were being leveled at him have already been done way worse on Game of Thrones. So that's a really interesting situation, that one.
Hmm. All right. Well, I just as you were talking, I said I set my TiVo to go grab The Bastard Executioner.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
I will check it out. So we got a bunch of other premieres coming around on Monday. We mentioned the blind spot starts Sandra Bullock Doodle Booty. And then Minority Report, based on the hit film of a long, long time ago of the same name. Now, your review of this hasn't posted yet, but I know you've seen it because I saw you post lots of cryptic things as if you were needing to be talked off a ledge. And I think that might have been about Minority Report. So what's the Tim Goodman report on the Minority Report?
It is terrible.
It sounded like you really lost the will to live while you were tweeting about it.
It is terrible. So bad. So like,
what makes it bad? Is it just ridiculous? What makes it bad?
Yeah, it's like, I like the movie, actually. I've seen the movie like three times. I like the movie.
Yeah.
None of the good parts of the movie that you like are actually in this. It's redonkulous. And it's like, there is the scene, you know, the whole like sliding the screen. Remember, that was a big thing, right? So you're a tech guy, even though at the time it was not a thing. It's you could slide something in the air and it was slid over here and now you're throwing it there and blah, 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 and you're moving it around. Yeah, there's a lot of that in this, but when Megan Good, the actress, is doing it, they've kind of choreographed it almost like it's a dance.
Hmm.
I mean, I look at it, I was like, oh, that doesn't look like she's being efficient in tech, in like future tech. That looks like she's kind of dancing. That's not good. I mean, I love Megan Good, and she can dance all she wants in a separate show. I would watch that. In fact, if it was just Megan Good dances, I would have watched that with joy. But it's not. It's Minority Report, and it's lousy. And bad acting across the board. There's even a thing where they've got her so sexed up, right, with the tight jeans and everything. They even have her wearing a leather jacket with a top button, and then the middle part, 7 to 8, 9 inches zipped down so that her cleavage, ample cleavage, can like bust out when she's, chasing down people. But it's not interesting. And one of the guys who's the precog, they're supposed to be twins. They look nothing alike. They're not even fraternal. These are clearly not related people. But he starts off normal. It's like he's one of the precogs and he kind of wants to help stop crime. That's how the series starts. And then over like 15 minutes, he starts acting way different. And by the end of the hour, he's actually talking like a computer, like a robot. Hmm. And I'm like, what the hell has happened here? So he went from like a normal character who meets somebody and says, I'm just trying to stop crime and I got a blah, blah. And then he's like, that does not compute, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, what am I watching and what happened? So it's a disaster.
A disaster, raves the Hollywood Reporter.
You only see one disaster this year. Yes.
Wow. Let me go through the other things that are premiering in the next week and let me know if you've got anything to say about them or if you know anything about them. Life in Pieces on CBS, a new CBS sitcom. Woo!
Yes, I heard it's terrible. Dan is reviewing it. All right. Good luck to Dan. Godspeed. Godspeed.
Scream Queens is coming on Tuesday to Fox.
It is, yes.
Mr. Ryan Murphy, our favorite.
I just was talking about cutting people slack on their new projects, so I'm not going to say a word. So it's a whole new thing. It's not American Horror Story, so who knows?
Or Glee.
Or whatever else he's been doing.
Yeah.
So, good luck on that.
It could be fine.
Could be fine. Dan's reviewing that. Sure. Woohoo.
Good luck, Dan.
Godspeed, Dan.
We know how you feel about all these shows because Dan's reviewing them. That's the code. That's the secret code. Sorry, Dan. Welcome. It's like hazing for the new critic.
We didn't know it was going to be him.
Oh, the Muppets.
I was going to review the Muppets, but as you may have found on Twitter, the Muppets, they only sent the
first two episodes
out to critics. They didn't even get them out till the 15th. So that was too late for me to get it into the magazine. And then I was going on vacation, so Dan had to watch it. And I hear there's some bad problems with that. And how do you mess up the Muppets? How do you mess that up?
Yeah. Yeah, I've read a couple of the early reviews of that, and it's kind of disappointing. It sounds like they took all the jokes from their little demo and then spread them across two episodes, which makes them, like, sort of slow and
lifeless. Yeah.
Which, you know, yeah, messing up, don't mess up the Muppets, people. I will watch that. I'm excited to watch it, and now I have just the fear that it's going to be.
Right?
Because the little test reel they did was pretty good, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to mess up the Muppets.
The Limitless.
But apparently it's happened.
The Limitless is on a 10 on Tuesday. The Limitless. This is your Bradley Cooper. It's not The Limitless. It's called Limitless. I'm just making fun of it. Bradley Cooper, you may remember from a movie a few years ago where he took some pills that made him. It's that old hokey, the human brain. People only use 30% of it, but what if a drug could make you use all of it? It's not true. We use all of our brains. But but anyway, apparently Bradley Cooper's like an executive producer and appears in the pilot and basically is like, yes, I am limitless. And now you, television actor, will also be limitless. Well, goodbye. And then there's a show.
Apparently. Never to be seen again.
Never to be. Yeah. Well, he's too big a star. I'm too big a star. I'm limitless.
If this was on HBO, I might come back in the third episode for, 5 minutes.
CBS? You might see me in the premiere of season two.
You're lucky to see me in the green room.
Yeah.
You'll be lucky to see him at craft services. He's going to be nowhere near that thing.
Well, he's an executive producer, so I guess he's got a financial cut. So that's what
he'll show up and he'll say, I like that. Good. Go with that. Nice shirt. Yeah. All right, buddy.
Maybe
good.
If you'd like come in for a day and we'll shoot a bunch of stuff and we'll say you're a hologram and just use those throughout the season.
They could send the Bradley hologram. We mm-hmm. could do that. Or yeah. It could be, let's all do a round table. Let's get buzzed into the phone conversation and it'll be like, Bradley, are you there? And he's like, no, this is Jim, Bradley's assistant. Bradley couldn't make it today. Yeah. That's what's going
to
happen.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I'll check out that first episode of Limitless. It could be not a thing in the great CSI cyber tradition. So.
You might be watching this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I'm going to have to check it out.
And you know what? You might actually be watching Minority Report.
Oh, no.
It's technology. You're bailiwick.
Are you gonna make me watch Minority Report? You said I might watch it. Does that mean I'm watching it?
I think you should watch it. Yeah, I think everybody out there right now listening to this is like, yes, watch, make him watch. Yes, I think you should watch it. I mean, it's science basically. You need to. it's for science, Jason. You have to watch two really bad shows for science. And look, we got D'Lore going on. Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, he did watch Best Time Ever with Neil Patrick Harris, which was the show that people were speculating might be the first show ever to be canceled before it reaches the Pacific time zone. Like, no, we're just going to put on a rerun of The Blacklist.
Yeah, like, it's really not the best time ever, apparently. I was on vacation and happily avoided all that. Mm-hmm. So I actually was having the best time ever, but apparently people who watched it were not. And D'Lore, maybe next time, he's going to have to next live... He'll watch it again live, and then he'll report back to us.
Wow.
That'd be kind of nice.
Yikes.
Are you happy for your homework?
I feel better now about not having to watch that, and instead just watching Minority Report and the Limitless. I'm just going to call it The Limitless.
You're going to call it The Limitless. I don't care. You're like 90.
Yeah. It's on the Google. I checked on the Google.
Are you kids watching The Limitless?
It's The Limitless. It's like The Mentalist. It's a very similar title. Wednesday, Rosewood on Fox.
Yeah, not watching that. That's a Dan thing.
What is that?
That is a very good-looking man just smiling a lot and solving problems.
That's
in
not
Miami.
A show. Good-looking man smiles? How is that a show?
If I was that good-looking, I would be on a show called Rosewood, too, and knowing that all I got to do is smile and solve some crimes because I'm a good-looking dude.
Oh, he's a doctor.
Oh, he's a doctor, right.
Who is in demand with law enforcement, and then they solve crimes. That's all the best shows of that one.
Oh, Godspeed, Dan. Good luck with that.
Oh, good.
Welcome to THR.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Let's see what else is happening. Oh, hey, you've been waiting for it your whole existence.
Yes.
Heroes Reborn on Thursday.
Also known as First Question at TCO. Why again? Yeah. Is this being reborn?
To remind us that people didn't like it when it got canceled.
Here is an asterisk I will throw into this conversation.
Okay. Ready?
Just like Casual, mm-hmm. Heroes Reborn had its premiere at Toronto
International, yeah.
So we reviewed it from there. I just haven't read it yet. But my asterisk was the person, the freelancer or whoever it was, I can't remember who it was. He could have been one of our movie critics. But the person was actually eager to review it.
Was David Rooney.
David Rooney. And he was eager to watch it. And I thought, well, that's a little bit worrisome right there.
Mm. Well, his bottom line is more of the same, which is either good news or bad, depending on your loyalties. So there you go.
If you want more heroes,
guess what? You got more heroes.
You know what? I like that. I'm just going to put a bottom line. More of the same. Mm-hmm. The limitless. More of the same.
Also, The Player. Hey, you saw The Player, didn't you? NBC. They're also premiering on Thursday.
Yes, not my first.
Is this based on the Tim Robbins movie of like a million years? This is even longer between movie and TV adaptation than Minority Report.
No, it's so funny because everybody who loves that and loves the people responsible for that movie are like, oh, it's not about that, is it? No, this is completely hokey nonsense, not even related to that at all.
They just use the name?
They just use the name, yeah.
What is wrong with them? So when does Tim Robbins come on The Player? That's what I want to know.
Did Robert Altman direct this?
Hold on. I used the Google to check out The Limitless, and now I've moved on to Player.
Yeah,
I'll take the off of it. Wesley Snipes is in this show.
He's described as being in it. Yeah, he's partly in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is he in it like Bradley Cooper is in Limitless?
No, he's in there a little bit longer. Okay. He's in there longer. It actually has so it's great because Blindspot has one of the characters from Strike Back. And The Player has the other.
Oh.
So, I don't know. I was a fan of Strike Back, so I like it. Kind of fun. Mindless.
So The Player, any good? Oh, my God. It says Wesley Snipes is a mysterious pit boss in this. Yeah. Does he say always bet on black? I hope he does. That would be the best.
That would be so awesome.
That would give me reason to watch it right there. So, what is it? Is it like crime and gambling and stuff?
If only it was. They're betting on crime. There's a syndicate of billionaires around the world who pop up in a hologram, which when you look at
a hologram,
not a thing. And it's like, it's so not a thing.
So they're shadowy billionaires.
Oh my God.
Betting on crime.
Instead of just like telling like people like what it is, they're like, let me show you what this hologram pops up. And
isolate torso.
Yeah, it's totally isolate torso. And you pull it up and it's like, these billionaires are betting on your ability or inability to solve a crime. Go.
Wow.
So yeah, it's like
it's person of interest meets the blacklist is what you're telling me. That's my elevator pitch for this one.
Wow, that is, you got that perfect. Yes,
nice.
But not
with Wesley Snipes.
As interesting as either of them.
Okay.
Yes.
So who is The Player? What is The Player? Why is it called that?
Because he is basically trapped in this game because he's got to find the person who killed his wife. Oh, spoiler!
Oh.
You're never going to watch it. Yeah, his wife dies. Who cares? They probably show it on the TV. It's not a big... it's not a twist. Right. It's not. Spoiler.
So
his wife dies. He's got to like find who it is. I'm like, we can tell you who he is if you solve these crimes.
Oh, so it really is Blacklist meets Person of Interest then. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
You nailed it. After like not even trying, you nailed it.
Right. The Player.
Yeah.
So not worth a watch.
I wouldn't write that one down.
Okay. Like,
unless you're talking about the Tim Robbins, Robert Altman film.
That's right. If I watch that show, I'm just going to be waiting for Tim Robbins to be in it. That's what's going to happen.
Put that down. Write that one down. But don't write down The Player slash
Tim Robbins can be one of the shadowy hologram billionaires if he wants to.
Yeah, no, it's not a thing.
Okay. Okay. Oh, shadowy hologram billionaires, though. That's
that's a phrase. That's a lot of billionaires. I looked at that list and I was like, wow, that's a really? That's a lot of billionaires. And are they all so bored that they're betting
on crime?
Do they really? And they have to all kind of be present to watch it happen.
The most dangerous game of all is crime. No, that's not it. It's man. Well,
hunting man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man hunting crime. Yeah.
So I had one more thing before we went to the reader letters, but it's,
sure.
I know you haven't read it, but the Hollywood Reporter did post a little op-ed from TV producer Gavin Pallone.
Yes.
Let me read the deck to you.
I want you to read it because I saw your tweet today about it. And I haven't read it yet because I was technically on vacation.
Here's the deck. The only thing that has exploded in television is the bad and the mediocre, as the number of good writers remains the same while demand for shows increases, leading to sophomore slumps as streaming services thin out the talent pool. So his premise is that we're not in a golden age of television because when you make more TV shows, it doesn't let new voices come in who have interesting things to say and might not otherwise have been allowed to say it. What it does is it just adds more mediocrity because in the great TV industry of old, the cream always rose to the top and the very best shows were always being made by the very best people. And he uses as example 1972. Which I kid you not, because then the very best writers. So it's a dumb article because he's saying first off that the people who were writing in television when there were only a few shows on were absolutely the very best, which I don't believe, and that the fact that everything had to be to a broad audience meant that you got a lot of stuff that was really kind of generic and crappy, and now people can write things that are much more interesting. So I'm the 1972. He literally cites. Room 222.
Is this a good time for me to say I have no control over what goes
the last couple of years of Gunsmoke and Laugh In, the Mod Squad, the Waltons, the Brady Bunch, because Sherwood Schwartz, he was definitely one of the best writers.
Oh my God, yeah. You want to
Partridge Family.
I would take him over Matt Weiner, right? I mean, and David Chase. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
wow.
So anyway, I'll put that in the show notes if people want to have a chuckle, but Tim had nothing to do with it.
I had nothing to do with it. I'm sad that we put it into the THR.
Oh, well, the THR. Good.
Yeah. See what I did there?
I did.
It's all callbacks right now.
All right, let's go to the letters from the listeners.
Okay.
Stanford Steph on Twitter says,
oh, yes.
Uh-huh. Watched Narcos over the weekend. Great stuff. Now I can swear up a storm in Spanish. Hashtag binge it like cocaine. I just love that. I love that binge it like cocaine became a hashtag.
I think that's good. Yeah.
The Narcos season 2 slogan should be binge it like cocaine.
I think she's right. And that's what it should be actually. Yes. Narcos. Excellent. It was fun. Good series.
Our buddy, it wouldn't be an episode of the TVTM without our buddy, My Vogon Poetry, coming back with more tweets to us.
Yes. Rallying. He's our new OG.
Yeah, he is.
Edition. Yeah.
He is. What is more important when you review a TV show, to experience it or to analyze it? I ask this because in the process of reviewing, some shows might fall apart. But if you enjoy the experience, does it matter?
I think that is I saw that on Twitter. And I thought it was a great question. I knew we would get to it. So did I put extra time into thinking of the answer? No, I did not, because I was in Big Sur. But I already knew the answer, so it didn't really matter. It's actually very complicated. It's very hard for me to watch anything the first time without looking at it critically. So read it to me just quickly again. Sorry, Jason.
What's more important when you review a TV show, to experience it or to analyze it?
Right. Okay. Experience and analyze. That's what I needed, the key there. So I think there's almost no way for me to just experience it without analyzing it. I get the difference. But for example, when I watch something like The Blacklist, right, I'm experiencing that show now, right? But I probably analyze it for the review. And I think when I analyze it for the review, I gave it a good review. And also because you have to sort of like grade in a curve a little bit with the network, you have to understand I don't think any good critic just holds everything to the highest standard, because that's really not fair for broadcast. It's not what they do. Their whole job is to appeal to the broadest audience. So you have to be you know, bigger, and you can't be Mad Men.
Well, I mean, so, that's what I learned reviewing technology products, is you review what the product is meant to be,
right?
Not put it up against some, you know, mythical product or some other product that is not the same, right? Well, this isn't a $10,000 hard drive. Well, no, it's not. It costs $200. Why don't you review it as a $200 hard drive?
Right.
And network shows are the $200 hard drive, is what I'm saying.
It's for
everyone.
Analogy. Yes, it's for everyone. It's the perfect analogy. And, you know, I like it, though, because I'm always analyzing it when I'm watching it. But I will say this. This doesn't really make any sense, I'm sure. But I try to watch the first show without taking notes. And if it's something like Fargo. And you know, a lot of stuff I don't even have to take notes on. There's no good dialogue for me to quote, unless I jump up and get a pen because something was super redonkulous and I write it down. Because a lot of times, if I just included bad dialogue in all my reviews, all of them would have stuff in it. So, but sometimes you can just watch something in for the first time and then you take more detailed notes the second time you watch it. So in some ways, I'm experiencing it and then not analyzing it and then analyzing it again. But I'm kind of contradicting myself because I think realistically, whenever I'm watching something, I'm analyzing it. So that's, you know, and that has ruined movies for me, by the way, as a side note. I can't really enjoy a movie now because I'm like, oh, I see all the shortcuts they took to make this 2 hours instead of 13 hours.
Yeah. So yeah. I feel though ultimately that the, no, I don't want to get too deep here, but the unexamined life is not worth living is the way it goes. It's like I feel like and when we do The Incomparable, we do this a lot where we take something we really like and then we start to break it apart and find out like what didn't it do well and why did it work. And some people don't want to do that. They just want the magic spell. I think that would be the experience. It's like they just want the spell. The entertainment cast a spell over them. They had a good time and then they moved on and they think about it fondly. And I, like you, I'm not wired that way. I want to take it apart. Even if I love it, I want to take it apart and see why did it work and what would I change about it? You know, what did not work as well? And, you know, that's just some of us think that way about it. And I do think that even if it's something you love, analyzing it makes you understand why you love it. And that's like part of the experience of really loving something is understanding all the amazing things about it. But I get how, you know, people, you know, sometimes you just want to lean back and have a
you want to be entertained.
Yeah.
Well, and that's when I saw my Vogue on Poetry posted that, I was like, wow, this is, because it'd be a real talker. I mean, this is an interesting subject because it's like a case by case thing. I know when I'm watching something and part of me knows that like this is not very good. But I like it. You know what I mean? It's like, I shouldn't be liking this because it's got so many holes and it makes no sense. But I like it. And then because it's either like, it's fun or it's hitting some level. So everything's a case-by-case basis because I know, like when I reviewed Marvel's series for Netflix. Mm. What is it? Not Avengers. What's the one that I
Daredevil.
Didn't like? Daredevil, right. And I remember thinking to myself, well, why couldn't I just like roll with that? I mean, it's based on a comic book and you know, why don't you just go, oh, it's a comic book, go with it, enjoy it and have fun. When you could say, look, you did that to this crappy hour long drama where this like doesn't make any sense. It's not a thing. So why didn't you do that for Daredevil? But I think when I looked back on Daredevil, the thing I had to disconnect was like, your whole premise is that he doesn't get shot. He fights people, and we live in a world of bullets. I couldn't make that, you know, I couldn't make that disconnect. I mean, when I teach this class on visual studies, we always talk about the opt-in moment.
Yep.
And there's an opt-in and there's an opt-out. You know, that was my, I could not, that was when I opted out because I couldn't, my brain could not take that. You know, you and I have talked many times about Lost and the opt-in moment with the polar bears.
Yeah, you got
very
buy
clear.
It.
Yeah, or, like, or I was like, I'm in, yeah, but somebody else would have said no. So it's a case-by-case situation, but it is kind of a fascinating question, and I could probably wonkify this thing for another hour, but we won't.
Did you see that the Mass Scheduler listens to this podcast, apparently?
I did see that, yes.
That terrified me.
Yeah, I know. I saw you sending him a response back. That was very, very nice. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, now, look, because you get great. Now he's retired. He's got all the time in the world.
Yeah, it's just it's we had that moment of like, oh geez, people are listening to the podcast. pretty scary.
It is not. Well, I mean, tonight even it was very funny that when you said, when you put out the tweet that we were going to drop something, a couple of people were excited. And I was like, oh, that's right. People do listen.
Yeah, people were really mad last week when I didn't post it until like late on Friday night. They're like, where is it? Australia was really mad because that's how they handle their Saturday afternoons, I guess. I don't even know. It's because it's simultaneous, but, you know, but
they're like,
time
we need our Jared Hayne news.
Yeah.
And we need our TVTM.
Exactly.
Damn it.
That's what they need.
International, worldwide, at least.
Worldwide, simultaneous. Kate in the 202.
Yes, that is Washington, right? DC? 202?
Yeah, DC.
Nice.
Kate in the 202. Wanted to echo Tim's assertion the real Colbert is 180 degrees different from the report character. I attended a late show test screening last week. And after a Hillary Clinton joke, Colbert turned to the audience and said it best, just because I no longer play a conservative pundit doesn't mean I don't sometimes agree with him. Also, Colbert was more relaxed and had more fun at the test screening. He did a bit where he tried to put a condom on a live chicken, and it gives me hope the show will get better as he settles into it. You guys are awesome. Thanks for the podcast. P.S. Maybe it's my excitement about Doctor Who coming back, but I really thought Tim's big announcement on the podcast and then his breaking THR news on Twitter was that he finally got around to watching a Doctor Who episode. Alas, no. That wasn't it. It was about the power rankings coming back someday.
Oh, that was very funny. Actually, no, I have not done it, and I should.
You could give Dan Feinberg a vote in the power rankings. You could give him like also receiving votes kind of thing.
let's not get crazy.
All right. Okay. You're right. That's completely impractical.
But I definitely have to figure out a way. I do want to bring it back, and I actually thought about you when I was in Big Sur because I was like I made a note to self of things to do down there, which you know. You know, your life's a little bit overscheduled and yep. stressful when you're like, here, remember to think about this when you're in the woods.
Oh, yeah, I do that.
So I wanted to consult with you on ways, and so we'll do that off right, the cast. We'll but some. I wanted to figure out ways we can, like, make in the world of too much TV, how do we do a power rankings? Yeah. And I would like your input.
There are ways. Yes, mm-hmm. we'll talk smart, about it. I agree with Kate. I thought week two Colbert already is looser. It feels like to me
yeah.
than week one,
and it's almost like how can you not be so? I mean, you got to like even if you're the coolest customer, you walk out and man, he has been thinking about this show 24/7 since it was announced.
Well, and honestly, all the comedy bits they're doing right now were probably written and shot over the summer. Like they're so evergreen, like the mm-hmm. desk bits.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, give them a couple of months where they're in the regular rhythm of it. And the comedy bits are kind of flowing more naturally rather than it being everything that's in the trunk from the summertime. And I think, I feel like it'll be better. My only complaint about, I mean, you wrote a good piece that I think you guys referenced that posted like when right before you recorded the show last time about mm-hmm. how he was really good with Biden,
right,
and really uncomfortable with stars.
Yes,
which is totally true. What struck me about it is I feel like sometimes when he's at the desk and he's reading, you know, from the prompter, he's reading a comedy bit. He gets into that character a little bit too much, where he's mm-hmm. just sort of really sort of almost shouting and as he's reading it instead mm-hmm. of it being more like coming from the actual person mm-hmm. and I feel like, you know, as with every show it recedes a little bit and you see a little bit more of him and he's getting a little more comfortable, so mm-hmm. I've been enjoying it, but I feel like, you know, you can see him getting looser just day by day.
Right. And this is why we don't review the first episode, right? Yeah. Or even the first week. It takes time for this stuff. I mean, I think I'm only about now that he's been renewed for a second season. I'm only at the point now where I think it's kind of fair to review Larry Wilmore. So I might get to that. Of course, now when I'm ready to do it, here comes the fall sludge.
Yeah. Yeah. And Trevor Noah soon, too.
Trevor Noah. I think that's going to be a damn thing.
That's going to be. Oh, interesting.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. And because ultimately
we'll see where he goes in the draft,
we both have a signing editor, so there's that.
That's true. To break all ties, to make sure everything's fair.
Although the big secret about the assigning editor, and if John is listening, hello John, it is he'll say, "What about that?" And I'll go, "No, not that." So yeah. I'm literally not going to do something if I don't want to do it. That's the bottom line.
Well, that's why you're the chief TV critic.
That's why I'm the chief.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Let's see. Jenny from down the block.
Oh, yes.
That's
again.
The almost area code of record, the 650.
Uh-huh.
Just says Dark Matter, which we talked about, that I got the name wrong earlier this summer, got a lot better after the first couple episodes. Jason, you should give it another look. I've got them on the TiVo now. I just haven't watched them. And she said, it got me wondering about giving shows a second chance. Oh, this is perfect. I should have brought this up about You're the Worst. Like you, I normally don't give shows another shot, but the fall season looks so lackluster that I may make an exception. Are there any shows returning this fall that you think had a rough beginning but have improved enough that viewers should give them a second chance?
Whoa. Well, that is an unexpected question.
It's like a second. So basically, is there a sophomore show maybe that that is worth a revisit?
Huh. Well, I think to get specific with hers, I think it would be a show that like didn't do that great, and then got better, and so maybe they should check it out now.
Maybe.
I don't know on that. I would say.
Well, CSI Cyber. No, sorry.
No, on that.
No.
Yeah, that one. No, I think I'm trying to think like of shows that were not very good and they got better. But what my mind is catching up on, and I may be redundant on this, is that I just think a lot of people haven't watched they haven't watched Jane the Virgin, and they haven't watched Fresh Off the Boat and Blackish and things that I know I'm kind of saying this, you know, over and over again, but I think those are ones that I liked them from the beginning, and in the case of Blackish, I think it did get stronger and go on. I am just quickly pursuing this though, because I think that's a good question. I look at something like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and we tell people it's the funniest, one of the funniest shows on TV, and they're like, "Oh, I've never seen that," and I'm stunned.
Yeah.
But Jane the Virgin for sure. That's one I'm kind of looking right now, just giving a look
and
at.
From things. The hindsight of the whole season, I mean, like Jane the Virgin, Fresh Off the Boat, Blackish. We know from that first season. If you gave it a sample and it didn't hit you right the first time, yeah, maybe you should go back, because there's a whole season there. You could probably binge watch it somewhere or other, and they held up for the whole season.
Well, and you know, we talked about and you sort of led the talk on this. So we talked about how The Flash.
Yeah,
was fun and then got better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the jury is either out or dismissed for some people for Gotham. I was actually fine with Gotham. I know a lot of people were like, "Oh, it's never going to have Batman. He's always going to be like a young Batman,
creepy kid Batman."
But I kind of thought the show was pretty good as it was. It was never going to be a show that I was going to watch constantly. The one that I will say, okay, this kind of works, but this is going to be a third season. For it, the one that I'm gonna revisit because I liked the first season so much and hated the second season. Do you know where I'm going with this?
No. You revisit Sleepy Hollow.
Yes.
Maybe they get it back on the rails.
Yeah, I think that they listened, and I think they're gonna try to put it back just for those two, Abby and Ichabod, and let's see if that pans back out in some of the same. Stuff we love so much about that first season,
good
which
one.
Was lost in the second season.
And I guess we could say You're the Worst.
You're the Worst would qualify.
That's what because, you revisited.
Right. And, you know, I didn't. Here's the other thing, though, and I'll throw this out for other people, because some people have said it on Twitter, but probably not enough. If you liked Married, and I didn't, and so I didn't watch the second season. So I want to know if people gave Married a second chance and whether I should go back and see it. So there's that.
Right. Thanks, but Jenny.
There's nothing. Yes, thanks, Jenny, from down the block. But there's nothing, you know, on there that I look at. I went over the whole schedule, and there's nothing for this fall season where I'm like, oh yeah, everybody missed that. And that's not really.
Yeah, I think we got.
And
we
I think you, well, on the other one, I'm not sure if you watched this or not, but The 100 on CW.
Yeah, I like that. I've only watched the first like six or something. I'm slowly going through that on Netflix from season one, but all that CW. So iZombie is coming back for a second season, and that was you might have missed that because that was sort of a late spring thing, and that's
it
Rob
was.
Thomas who did Veronica Mars, and that's worth a look.
It is. I think that's what we can just say in a nutshell.
CW
for Jenny's question is like people should revisit the CW.
Yeah, Supernatural's only on its 11th season, so you can check that out.
Right. And get it before it goes away, because it may
guys,
only go 31 seasons.
One of those brothers is going to fall down and break a hip. And then he's going to be sitting at home watching The Limitless. So,
Wow, you brought it all the way back. Wow.
Okay, here it's we got. Yeah. This is the bottle episode, Matt from the Plus 44.
Okay,
jolly old.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for introducing me to both Rectify and Jane the Virgin. I'm recently halfway through the first season of Jane the Virgin after binging three seasons of Rectify, and boy, if Tim can name two different shows further apart in pace, then I would be impressed. I love them both. I'm a couple of episodes behind on the podcast, binging to catch up again, but had to write when Tim talked about how slow Rectify was. I actually found it very easy to breeze through, yet still be able to think about it in depth. The overarching plot is slow, but my investment in Daniel and his family hooked me that I was shocked when I finished the first season in one day. I attribute this to six-episode seasons, bar the second, which I admit did slump a little at the start, but I couldn't believe how quickly it breezed by. I need more. I also want to thank you for introducing me to Jane the Virgin. It's hilarious, yet heartwarming. Gina Rodriguez is thoroughly deserving of all the praise she gets. But for me, the self-awareness of how insane it all is what makes the show. I even know the moment it hit me. This is your buy-in moment, Tim. How ace this show was. When
like
Petra
that.
Hit her hostage blackmailer over the head with her ex-lover's urn. The narrator is the best use of said storytelling device since Ron Howard in Arrested Development. I look forward to finishing off the second half of the season. Just saying thank you, I'll leave you with the strange dream I had in which Rectify borrowed a few stylistic choices from Jane the Virgin, mainly the Latin lover narrator now moving shows and narrating Rectify. I'll leave the rest to your imagination. From Over the Atlantic, Matt from the Plus 44.
Wow. Okay. I didn't see that coming, Matt. And that got me. That made me laugh because that is completely absurd dream. Aren't dreams interesting? That would be, Rectify narration.
Because in Matt's world, these are the two shows that you introduced to him, right? Rectify and Jane the Virgin. And then in his dream, he was like, they are the same show.
Right. And he's right. They couldn't be any different, more different. One moves at the speed of light and the other one's like, woo, moving slow. Yeah, I love Rectify and Godspeed. Everybody catch that show. Everybody find it. So I'm always for that. He's got another season to go. He's got to get through season three. Yeah. And it's been renewed for season four, so we're all good.
Matt's all obviously got some time, although he's got a. Remember this, Matt? I think binged to get caught up with us, and now he's behind us again. So
look at what happened. So you know what that tells me? That tells me. That tells me insane devotion followed by that's not all that.
Well, he had to watch all the shows we recommend as well.
Oh right, and then
gets behind again.
There could have been like a well, he's in England. It could be a tea addiction. Like a really strong, maybe he was drinking a lot of tea.
That's what makes the time slow past. You lose track of time.
Plowing through episodes of us. Yeah. And now he's like, you guys.
I got to watch Rectify. Okay, one more letter. This is from, this is from Noah from the 562. Our buddy, we've heard from him before, from Long Beach.
Yes.
He's got, he says, I've got two pieces of good news before I get into the reasons that I've written you.
Okay.
No. One, I don't have a grudge against either of you. Good to know. Two, hey Tim, I remembered your co-host's name. His name is Jason. I could have sworn it was Dick or Jackson or something along those lines, but now you can hold your head up high, Mr. Snell. Look at that. I know your name now. Okay, thanks, Noah. Anyways, as of September 14th, 2015, NBC's Mr. Robinson has been canceled.
Yes.
I never watched it. I noticed it was slammed by critics. Did either of you catch the show? And how was it? So, what do you think, Mr.? This is Craig Robinson, right? From The Office.
Yes. Noah is a character.
Questions about shows that he didn't watch but got canceled and wants to know, did he miss it and was it any good?
You know, Noah's quite the character.
You got any answers about Mr. Robinson?
I have the greatest answer of all time for Mr. Robinson. Didn't have to review it.
Yeah.
And now that it's canceled, will not watch it.
Yeah.
So that time saved.
I like Craig Robinson.
I like Craig Robinson too. I think that the struggle people had is that he's better as a character actor.
Yeah, that may be. Also, I wondered what you two thought. This is going to be a little. This is like changing from Rectify to Jane the Virgin. We're going to go from Mr. Robinson. I wonder what the two of you thought of the Starz drama Boss.
Oh, wow.
I personally found myself really enjoying it. Kelsey Grammer was robbed of an Emmy nomination and unfortunately won a Golden Globe, but I'm rambling on. Let me continue. It was canceled after two seasons. It's really a bummer. I thought it might finally be a competent Starz drama. Not competent miniseries, competent drama, but I guess I was wrong. Not many people watched it. Damn you.
Yeah. I love that show. And I was one of the foremost people who spoke out about.
Champion of Boss.
Yeah. So, and you know, look, they've
the they, boss. They,
of the boss. Yeah. I don't remember watching the boss.
On the Stars.
You know what? Yeah, Chris Albrecht even has come out and said, who runs Stars, that they made a mistake.
Mm.
And that they should have done three seasons and then something could have happened. The network was looking for traction, and they had a great show on their hands. And Kelsey Grammer's giving a career-defining performance, great writer, and they had so much going for it, and they just couldn't pull it off. But yeah, I really loved Boss. I wish that would have kept going on. So
yeah,
live and learn.
Thanks, Noah. Thanks for remembering.
And you know what, Noah? The Stars has some good stuff now. They got Outlander. That's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks for not having a grudge.
He knows who you are now.
He does.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no grudges, so it's all good.
No grudges.
Also, I select what letters get read. So, you know, the fact that Noah's letters get read means that I have nothing against Noah.
Right. And you have
I read his letters.
You can't be hurt. You have a thick exterior.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's it. That's the end of my letters.
Yeah. I think we did it. We got all the way through from the Emmys on Sunday all the way through the Player.
Oh, so much information. Yeah, so, the Player. I can't wait to see Tim Robbins.
So much information. Out of all the information, that's all you retained, right? That Tim Robbins is maybe in some remake.
Yeah, and Bradley Cooper is in The Limitless, but Tom Cruise is not in Minority Report.
Right. Well, those are all the salient facts gathered from today's podcast.
I think so. Yes. I think we learned a lot. And also that Rectified just needs to be narrated by the guy from Jane the Virgin.
Yes. That's
good. Solid.
Is so crazy. I'm afraid I'm going to have that dream now.
Somebody needs to do I'm going to put this out there in case we've got some very talented YouTube type people out there listening to the TV Talk Machine. Can you give us a little mashup of Rectify with a narrator from Jane the Virgin? I would love to see that.
Absolutely.
Get on that.
Totally mash it up. Yeah, that's been done a lot. I mean, not that particular. Remember when somebody mashed up Deadwood with a soundtrack, a laugh track? It was so great. It was so very funny. Those are always good.
Can't wait for that Deadwood movie.
That's nice. It's so not going to happen.
Like the rich is coming back.
That's totally the Russian in the woods.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's right. The Pine Barrens.
He's and if you know what we're talking about, you should be watching TV. That's good.
Yeah.
We're happy to have you on this podcast.
That's right. But that's the end for this podcast.
So this one's complete.
Let me give the numbers, or at least the ways you can contact us. They're not numbers anymore because this is on the internet. You can tweet at Tim. He is Bastard Machine on Twitter. You can tweet at me, Jay Snell, on Twitter. But if you've got a question for us, send it to TVTM on Twitter. Or you can go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. Or you can send us an email, podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. And we'll be back next week with another episode. Tim, it's been a pleasure. Next week, I will have watched many terrible shows because of you. So I hope you're happy.
And I will have watched many terrible shows as well, but not as terrible as the two that you're watching.
Or all the shows that Dan Feinberg has to watch.
So it'll be fun next week.
All right. See you next week.
Okay.